Welcome to the Texas Values Report. This is Jonathan Sines, president of Texas Values. Great to be with you on another glorious week in the state of Texas. I've got some breaking updates. That's why the show was pushed back about an hour or so. I was witnessing the announcement of a new candidate for the Speaker of the House, Representative Tom Oliverson. I'll talk about that later in the show, but that's the reason for things getting pushed back. If you're new to the show, we talk about the issues of faith, family, and freedom in the arenas of the courts, the legislature, and the media. This show's been running for 6 years now, so I'm glad you're a part of it and hope you learned something new on the show today. We have this show every week, so if you're, you know, someone that you think we should have on the show, interesting guest, timely topics, please share those with us and we'll take a look at them. We've got quite the slate later on this year as we move into a very busy election year, if you will, and also an off year for legislative work. But one of the issues that's been taking center stage a lot the past couple of months has been the pro-life issue. And in many ways, that's because in the state of Texas, we've protected babies so comprehensively that the other side, the pro-abortion side, has tried to find any way to come up with something negative. We saw this happen towards the end of last year where there was a woman named Kate Cox who did all kinds of things to draw attention to herself. She was 20 weeks pregnant and, you know, got involved in the court system because she wanted to end the life of her child. And there was some discussion about the disorder or the syndrome that this child had. Many people thought it was trisomy 18. We had a lot of discussion about that. We even had Rick Santorum, former U.S. Senator, on to talk about his teenage daughter that has that condition. And so a lot of discussion, but, you know, you don't always hear people respond to that and say, well, here's the rest of the facts, right? And we try to do that a lot in the show. And so someone who knows a lot about that issue is going to be our guest today. Jacqueline Smith has over 25 years in the pro-life movement. She and I, her and her husband and I, we've been friends for a long time. A lot of my, you know, really active pro-life work started up there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area when our kids were very young. And so her and her husband have been blessed with 12 children. Six of those are in heaven. She'll talk a little bit more about one in particular. But she and her family and her husband have had a touch with this issue of trisomy 18 in a very personal way. So we're going to have a very meaningful conversation about that today. Jacqueline, welcome to the Texas Values Report.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, listen, I'm glad to give you an opportunity to talk more about this issue. You know, you spoke at the Texas Rally for Life earlier this year. There was a lot of focus around these issues back then. Still from day to day, you'll still see discussion about it and talk about it. But we have to do this. We've got to dig in deeper. We've got to educate people more. And I think by doing that, that's how we continue to have a strong pro-life presence, not just in our laws, but in our culture as well. And so, look, as I mentioned in my intro, you and I go way back, right? So I know personally that you've been involved in this, in the pro-life issue for quite some time, but I didn't know a lot about your personal history with this. And so tell us a little bit about why you got involved in pro-life work. And then let's talk about Gemma, and we'll get into more of the details of that conversation and why it's mattered so much to you.
Right. So I think one of the personal reasons that I've been involved in this work, I mean, obviously I love babies and do not want them harmed, which abortion is the greatest harm to unborn children, right? But my own mother, when she was pregnant with me, she was going through an illness of double pneumonia. And she was very sick and she was in the hospital and taking medications, and she did not know she was pregnant with me. Wow. And they wanted to do a test on her, and they wanted to, for this test, put her under so she'd be under general anesthesia. And they told her one of the risks if she was pregnant is that it could cause problems with the baby. And so she asked for a pregnancy test first, found out she was pregnant. And then they advised her after they did the test differently. They didn't put her under for the test. Instead, they used a local anesthesia. And then afterwards, they decided, you know, hey, this is a high-risk pregnancy, and we've seen babies from pregnancies like this. And her doctors, a team of doctors, set her down and recommended that she terminate her pregnancy. That pregnancy, of course, was me. And, you know, she said no. And so for once in my life, I suppose, I was happy that she was stubborn. And she told them no. And I was born on October, 9 months later, you know, and healthy. So except for seasonal allergies, which I blame Texas for.
Well, you know, in many of us that have been in those rooms where that conversation takes place, You know, it almost sounds like it's a standard question or something that they have to mention. Okay, you know, you have this option. And it's, you know, and in many ways, like you're talking about several years ago, and I imagine it still happens now, a lot of pressure is put on women and the, you know, the mother and the father and, you know, the whole situation to where it makes you feel like, oh, I guess maybe that's the right thing to do, right? And right. instead of
all
having...
our doctors were saying, do this. And the yeah. sonograms back then were fuzzy. So it's not like they had major proof, you know? They were just, this is 77. This is the new thing. You should try this.
Yeah, no, and, you know, and how tragic, right? Even now, but certainly during those times, if you have women who decided, okay, maybe that's what I'm supposed to do, and then later find out, oh, I might have had other options and my baby might have been okay. And so we hope to help people avoid that. And, you know, we look at the information we have now, but that sentiment is still out there. Tell us about your family. Tell us about Gemma. And then let's talk a little bit more deeply about the condition of trisomy 18. But let's first talk about the issue in a more personal way and what happened in your situation and why that matters so much to the rest of us in the pro-life movement and in Texas in general.
Right. So Gemma was our seventh baby to be born. And like all of our children, we were super excited when we found out we were pregnant. And we did the, you know, scavenger hunt to announce it to the kids. We posted it on Facebook. And when it came time for her 20-week sono, on October 1st of 2019, we had pulled all the kids out of school to go to the sonogram. And at that particular doctor's visit, the doctors informed us that there were several things wrong with our baby. And now we had already fallen in love with her. We had all six kids in the room, right?
Right.
And they told us all the things that were wrong. Hole in her heart, intestines were, you know, not forming properly, all long list. And the doctor's recommendation that day was termination or comfort care. And now I inside internally, I chuckled because she didn't know that I do pro-life talks for a living. And I was like, she's in for it.
Yeah.
But my response to her was, you know, ma'am, in our family, we give birth to our babies and we're not ready to discuss comfort care.
Yeah.
Because at that point, we couldn't even, you know, baby was being shy and we couldn't even tell boy or girl. I was like, we certainly do not know enough to make decisions right now. And we're definitely not making the decision to abort. And she again asked us about that because she went on about what tests we could do to determine the, you know, confirm. And I was like, ma'am, we give birth to our babies and we're not ready to discuss comfort care. And you'll appreciate this. My husband Andrew's response to her was, we don't kill our kids.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we carried to term and we had to look for life affirming doctors. I mean, I did have a pro-life OBGYN. I just wasn't at his doctor's office that day, right? Because it was the 20-week sono. Those a lot of times are not done with your usual doctor. They're done at the maternal and fetal medicine doctor. And but I had to find life-affirming care. I had to advocate for her in ways that I didn't have to ever advocate for any of my other kids. And I really feel like even though we found care when we looked for it and cooperative doctors, we had to like force it. We had to push the envelope and you know, really show them that this daughter of ours was like any one of our other children. And we expected to care for her like if any of our other children. And we didn't want her discriminated against. And so
it's a lot to go up against. We're talking with Jacqueline Smith. She is a leader in the pro-life movement for two decades, also leads a wonderful event, and she's the founder of the Pro-Life Boot Camp up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I know she'll be involved in the Bishop's Pro-Life Dinner this weekend with Tim Tebow. Texas Values is happy to sponsor that event up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But let's talk about Gemma, because I know that she was with you outside of the womb just for a short amount of time, but that time meant a lot to you and your husband and your family.
Right. She was born on January 31st of 2020, and it was kind of a surprise because we had scheduled for her to be born on the following Tuesday, but we went into the doctor that day for a regular visit, and the doctor said, hey, you know, we think you need to go across the hospital and have a baby. And that day, I also had five of the six kids in the waiting room because it was a it was after school appointment, and I was like, really? Because the kids are in the waiting room. But yeah, that's what we did. We went across the street, had an emergency C-section, and she was with us for 28 hours. In that time, she received her sacraments from the church. So she was baptized by her daddy in the operating room. And then our Byzantine priest came the following day and gave her the sacraments of confirmation and first communion and anointing of the sick.
Mm, wow.
And so she was completely, fully Catholic and beautifully clean in Christ. And so when she passed a few hours later, we know she went straight to heaven. And so now she is our Saint Gemma, and her full name is Gemma Gianna Perpetua Smith. And, you know, we miss her terribly, but we know that we have done everything we could for her. And as Catholics and as parents, in any Christian worldview, our goal is to get our children to heaven. And so I did that. But, you know, we would have liked more time with her on earth, but that's our only regret.
Well, and,
in the whole
you know,
process.
Look, this is the opportunity that I think is being taken away from so many families, and many of them aren't even really aware enough to know that they would have that support or that they could do that, because they're sort of going against the tide, if you will. And it's like, I'm sure there are like a lot of raised eyebrows. What? You're going to do this? You know what? And it shouldn't be that way, right? And some of it is, you know, people injecting their own feelings about how they think this might impact someone instead of letting them decide and presenting these options. And a lot of that has to do with the suggestion that trisomy 18 is a death sentence, and it's not, right? We know that the percentages, right, of babies living for quite a long time after that may be low, but it's not a foregone conclusion. And so we should let this play out and see how it goes instead of thinking, you know, we're doing something, you know, considerate, you know, compassionate, right, with the use of words like comfort care. So what can you tell people out there about, you know, the value in being able to make that decision and decide what's important for your family and what it's like to have that connection with your child, even if it's just for a small amount of hours outside of the womb?
Right. So first, let's explain what trisomy 18 is. So when we went to the doctor on that 20-week visit, that's what they had seen signs of. And then they confirmed trisomy 18 with an amniocentesis a couple weeks later. And trisomy means that there's three of something. So typically, every baby gets two of each chromosome, and a trisomy baby gets three of one of the chromosomes. Extra genetic information, basically. And the thing is, the reason why we don't know that it's instantly lethal and it's not instantly lethal is because we don't know how that extra genetic information is going to play out. So with every baby, there's a spectrum of differences in how they present. So some will have minor heart issues. Some will have major heart issues that are truly life-threatening. But we don't know until baby is born. And so it's really important that families are able to get support when they get this decision. And something to be aware of is that when this diagnosis is given, that's a traumatic event in the life of that family. Mm-hmm. That they are in love with their baby, and they're finding out something is horribly wrong with their baby, and they have to be able to process that. And for us, we had to come to grips. We had to like grieve and the loss of the pregnancy we thought we had, and then learn to love the baby that we did have. And our beautiful baby with an extra chromosome with more to love, right? And with that journey, we were able to get the help, a free service from Be Not Afraid. And they are an organization that walks with families on these journeys of all kinds of different diagnoses, of different life-limiting things that can be told in the womb. And they walked with us the whole time. And they gave us resources. And I had on my cell phone the phone number of a neonatologist. So if I ever thought that I wasn't being told the right information from my doctors in person, I could confirm it and ask questions with somebody that I knew was on my side.
What a wonderful resource.
That was so valuable.
Yeah, what a wonderful resource. We're talking with Jacqueline Smith. She has been in the pro-life movement for over two decades, the mother of a trisomy 18 baby, a beautiful daughter And you can learn more about Gemma at the Facebook page, facebook.com/Gemma. That's G-E-M-M-A. Gemma, pray for us. Learn more about that journey, but also maybe a source of encouragement for people that are finding out about this issue, or they may later, right? Something that can empower them. And, you know, we know sometimes babies live longer than that, right? We've got, I mentioned that at the beginning, Senator Rick Santorum's daughter, who's a teenager. And we know that as medical, you know, the medical community, as their advancements, that we're seeing more of that. You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting, anecdotally, if you will, I was reading an article about some of this and it's some different studies that have been done. And they said one of the things that can be a factor in the baby living longer is how early the parents know about it, right? And so so it's good that we know about it ahead of time. That's not a sign that, oh, you know now, so let's end the life of the baby. That's an opportunity to extend that life or maybe have a better chance that it will. But we know this has been talked a lot about in the media, almost as if, and you hear it, you know, that it's a death sentence and it's just a foregone conclusion. So some tough work we have to do to try to turn that around, but it's important work because inevitably there's going to be a family that's going to find out about this for the first time, and it's important for them to know there are some options that exist, and then they get to decide how to handle it. Even more important, the state of Texas. It's not as if the law says, well, we protect babies unless they have trisomy 18, right? And so, so talk to us about what you would say for anyone that, you know, maybe finding out about this soon. And, you know, maybe they don't feel like they're prepared.
Right. Well, I don't know, anything will prepare you, but, you know, because it is tough. But I think that, you know, one of the things with finding out beforehand, it all depends on what you do with that information. Yeah. So, you know, we found out the baby Gemma had that trisomy 18 diagnosis. We didn't use that against her. Instead, we used that to find out more about the help that we could offer her, right, to find and advocate for her care. However, we're finding that in the hospitals, instead of that being a helping factor, it's actually working against our babies, because then they're discriminated against and not given care, or they're just aborted, which then doesn't provide opportunities for new innovations and in how to care for these special babies. So the best way to, you know, I love the Texas law because, like you said, it doesn't discriminate. It saves and protects all the babies. And finding that help is possible through a website called prenataldiagnosis.com, thanks.com. Anyway, Be Not Afraid Ministry.
I want to do something too. You know, we have a new website called lovethembothtexas.com. You and I talked about this in January around the Texas Rally for Life. We'll talk with Ashley and our team. We'll make sure we get that link to what you're talking about on that, because part of that website is sort of a, you know, we want it to be a gathering place for a lot of these resources. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. And now, is that just based in Texas, or people from all parts of the country can benefit from that information?
Right. So it's the prenatal diagnosis website gives information on a variety of diagnoses that babies could get. So it basically gives you good information so you can be fully informed about your child. But then also it'll connect you to local resources. So if you fill out the form on there, they will make sure that you're put into connection with someone who can help you. And like Be Not Afraid is not based in Texas, but we use their services. They partnered with some local services for us to do photography and things that we needed that were like in person. But at the same time, they gave all their support virtually before COVID, before it was like the thing to do. Right. They were doing that online and through texting, and they were a phone call away. So it was like they were next to me.
Well, so I tell you,
just because they're out of state doesn't matter.
I have learned so much also in the past 3 or 4 months on this issue. It's not an issue we talk a lot about. You know, obviously it doesn't get a lot of attention overall. And so, you know, I might have had some awareness of Senator Rick Santorum. And, you and I know each other. And somehow I missed, I'm sure you've shared about this before, but I wasn't even aware of it in your personal life. And so I was encouraged to hear you talk about it at the Texas Rally for Life in January. But I've also appreciated myself getting to learn more about it. And I've, you know, been through that circumstance at a very early stage when you thought there was going to be a new baby in the family, and then you found out that wasn't going to be the case. That's not an easy process and, you know, time period in your life to go through. And so anytime that there's an opportunity to protect the life of that child, I know that's what we want to do. And so great information today. And again, Facebook pages, facebook.com/Gemma. That's with a G, G-E-M-M-A, Gemma, pray for us. You can find more about baby Gemma, also about the Trisomy 18 issue and some of the journey of the Smith family. And Be Not Afraid, great different websites. We'll put those in the comments link so people can find out about this information. So, hey, I hope the Bishop's Pro-Life Dinner goes well this weekend. It always does. I know y'all got Tim Tebow there. I'm sure he's going to be delightful and leave everybody excited and encouraged. But thank you for your courage to continue to talk about this issue that's so personal, that I'm sure also brings up some other memories that can be difficult at times, but being able to see the value that it can provide to so many people on such an important issue.
Thank you for having me and for just giving this opportunity for sharing her story. These gives us a way to keep her with us and to have an impact beyond what happened in January of 2020.
Well, until Andrew, I said hello. It's been a while since I've seen that guy in person. How long is his beard now?
Better be watching, so right? Yeah. Say hi to him.
That's right.
Straight up.
Hey, Andrew, hope you're well. Shave, no. That's me. That's my style. Okay, well, listen, Jacqueline Smith has been our guest today on the Texas Values Report. Thanks, Jacqueline.
Thank you.
All right, I got a few more minutes. We're going to switch gears. Great topic, though, by the way. Share this with people on Facebook and other platforms so they can hear more about this conversation. And watch the interview I did with Senator Rex Santorum, too, to learn more about this issue. Just fascinating stuff, but so timely and important, even though it can be difficult. So, so as Jacqueline leaves our show and our Zoom, what's it called? Our Zoom room, I'm going to switch gears and talk about where was I earlier today? Why was the show pushed back? Or why did we say we're going to do it 11? We got pushed back to noon. So I saw on social media that there was going to be a big announcement down in central part of Austin, close to downtown. Our friends at Texas Public Policy Foundation, TPPF, they're having their big annual policy summit this week, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And so a lot of people at the AT&T Center, which is where this event's being held. And so I saw on social media that there was going to be an announcement by Representative Tom Oliverson. Didn't say exactly what, but the suggestion was that it likely had something to do with a possible announcement for him being a Speaker of the House candidate. That's what it was. So I ran down there because we organization has a close relationship with Chairman and Representative Tom Oliverson for many years. I was able to reach out to him. He was busy, and I was like, I'm going to go down there and see about this announcement. And sure enough, that's what it was. So Representative Tom Oliverson, who is a current member of the Texas House, I don't think he had a challenger in the primary. He may in the general, but a lot of expectation he will be returning to the Texas House. He announced that he has filed paperwork to be a candidate for the Speaker of the House. And you might be saying, wait a minute, isn't there already a Republican Speaker of the House? There is. That's Dade Phelan. You may be aware he's been pushed to a runoff by David Covey out there in his own House district. So the Speaker of the House is not a statewide candidate on the ballot, just for the people that don't know and those that are watching at home, right? This is a member of the Texas House that has to run for re-election in a specific geographic district. And then there's a separate vote just by the House members for the Speaker of the House. But you stay in that position until there's another vote, right? And so arguably all Dade Phelan has to do is win his election for Texas House and he stays the Speaker until they have another vote in January of 2025, right? But if he loses his re-election as a House member, you know, he can still serve out that term, but that sets the stage to say there's going to need to be a new Speaker of the House. But you got Tom Oliverson. That's not even been decided, but there are a lot of House members, at least what I'm hearing and some chatter out there, if you will, suggesting that, you know, and we heard Matt Mikowiak suggest something, if you will, a week or so ago on our radio show that this likely means that there's going to be a new Speaker of the House or House members are going to select someone new or very possible because the Speaker of the House, Dade Phelan, has been pushed to a runoff. He might not win, but even if he does, it's at least a signal or an indication that there's some concern about his leadership and his presence as our Speaker of the House. The Lieutenant Governor got involved in that race, right? He endorsed David Covey. You don't see that very often. If I don't know that that's ever happened. I imagine it's possible, but not recently. And so Tom Oliverson announced today he's running for the Speaker of the House. And, you know, whether Phelan gets reelected or not, right, he thinks it's time for a new direction. Two of the things he mentioned of reasons why that he thought he was hearing from people and concerns was, number one, the Democratic chairs issue. And he said straight up, if he's elected Speaker of the House and the Republicans are in the majority, which is the expectation and currently the situation now, that there will be no Democratic chairs. He will not pick and select people because the Speaker makes those selections. And some of that has to do with seniority and other things. The other thing he said was that the process for impeaching Ken Paxton was rushed, that in many ways members were surprised by that. They didn't have a lot of time to process that information. And he, you know, puts that blame on the current Speaker of the House, Dade Phelan, for how he handled that issue. But he also said there are circumstances, too, where bills like his have not made it out of committee. And he talked about the gender modification issue, which we know had a bumpier road, you could argue, because of the parliamentarian issues and the points of order that were called. And he thinks that had something to do with the current Speaker of the House. I would agree there's evidence to back that up as well. And a lot of people feel that way. So, interesting news. As you know, look, that issue goes to a runoff. The runoff elections are May 28th. I think there'll be a week of early voting. You know, our separate organization, Texas Values Action, has made some endorsements, but I was simply there to witness what was going on. I did have a member of the media ask me about it, but it was interesting to see Representative Oliverson be very direct, right? And he was polite. He's a statesman. He's, has a lot of respect for the way that he handles himself and treats his fellow House members, whether Republican or Democrat. But he didn't shy away from some of those tough issues and being very clear about why he was deciding to run for speaker. Again, it's not a separate election for the people. This is something that House members vote on when they get ready for the beginning of the next legislative session in January, and that'll be in 2025. But a lot of those things are starting to be talked about now, right? It doesn't like everyone shows up in January and wants to figure out who the Speaker of the House is going to be. So, he obviously had a good organized plan. He was asked, did he talk to other members? No, it's not like he has a lot of members. He announced and said, all these people are behind me. He was asked if he talked to Lieutenant Governor directly about it. I think he gave an answer of, you know, they didn't have a real specific conversation, but they do know each other well. So you talked about having some interactions with him recently. And so we'll see what happens. But that was some big news today. And particularly with that big event going on, a lot of buzz about it over at the AT&T Center. So I appreciated being able to be there. Whoever it was that tipped me off and the rest of us, excuse me, on social media, that had a little time to go over there. But these are important things that are happening in our state. The Speaker of the House has a lot of power. We think about who's going to be the chair of committees and also who is up there and really sort of the spokesman for the House in many ways. There's been a lot of concern and criticism of Speaker Phelan really in the past 6 months, if not years, since the impeachment and the Ken Paxton impeachment in the House and other matters. Then we had the election results where a lot of incumbents that supported impeachment or were very close to Speaker Phelan either lost their primary election because of a challenger or they're getting pushed to a runoff. And many of them look like they're going to be in a tough spot and may be likely to lose this runoff election. So interesting stuff there. I may be at the U.S. Supreme Court next week because there's a big case coming out of the state of Texas that deals with the pro-life issue that's being argued at the U.S. Supreme Court. Important stuff. If you don't know about it, we made an announcement several weeks ago. Our Faith, Family, and Freedom Policy Forum is on September 13th and 14th. Get signed up now. Put it on your calendar. We're going to have some great speakers there. Super excited about that. Had a great event in Fort Worth last week. We're going to be doing some events around the state in your local area. If you want us to come to your area, let us know. You want to volunteer, help us put an event together. We'd love to do that. But overall, as we get closer to the end of the month of March, please consider making a donation to our work. That's how we continue to do the work that we do, whether it's in the courts, the legislature, or the media, is because of the thousands of people that decide to support us. Our annual budget's about $1.5 million collectively with the other organizations we have, about $2 million. And those are bills that have to be paid every month so we can do the work that we do and also try to hire new people and bring more people into our work and more projects like Texas Values University. So go to our website, txvalues.org. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Make that donation now. Then that's how together we can protect faith, family, and freedom in Texas. And we'll talk to you next week on the most recent broadcast next week of our Texas Values Report.